Hello.
Hello,
Right.
Rosho.
Yeah. You know why I was I remember I was gonna take a nap?
Yeah.
So instead I got into a YouTube black hole, but instead it was just one video.
For an hour?
Yeah, kind of actually. So I'm watching the 2016 Classic Tetris World Championship.
Oh,
Guess who it
nice.
is?
It's our buddy.
Yep, Jonas. So
The
he's
world
actually in
champion Tetris
Wikipedia now, which
player.
is kind of crazy.
He really.
Well, I don't think he has his own entry yet, but there's a Classic Tetris World Championship, right? This is pretty impressive because the contestants play on an actual NES and CRT televisions, like the old school televisions. The final rounds are streamed online with live edited screens and a heads-up display to improve viewer experience. The tournament has been dominated by Jonas Neubauer, who has won six titles and only lost the final in 2014 to Harry Hong.
Wow.
So he's been doing this for seven
Cool, man.
years, and he's won
Man.
every single one. Spoiler alert, he's
I know. And
won it.
that dude used to
Pretty
be
awesome.
that dude used to be one of your BFFs, man.
So kind of cool to see people doing the thing,
Like I
whatever that thing is. So,
Yeah, like I
yeah.
don't know if I told you this, but there's this basketball player that he used to play for like our high school basketball team whenever we were in high school, and he now he's dating Michelle Wee.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
Okay.
so like I went through like not a YouTube black hole, but just kind of like a Facebook stalking
Yeah, sure.
fate, like a little sesh, and then I stumbled into that guy, and I'm like, I wonder what he's up to now. And then I started looking at pictures and stuff, and there was one of him and Michelle Wee. So I figured it was like an autograph session or something, or like a meet the celebrity type of thing, right? But then it was like them on a balcony, and like she was holding him, like they were holding each other.
This is a really good fan club they
Yeah,
got
like
going
wow,
on
she
here.
man, she really likes her she really wants to hold on to her fans. But and then like so I googled like his name and her name and stuff, and then there was like an article, and it said, yeah, they were dating. Yeah, that's
Well, do they, they'll do you
small
know, right?
world.
Like, sometimes I get into these weird, like those stupid ads that have like, oh, look at these, where these celebrities are now. And it's like, man, whatever. And I'm like, oh, I wonder what they're up to now. And then I click on them and it's like a slideshow of like 50, people who used to, the one I clicked on was what their celebrity, the celebrities' kids that are like grown up now,
Oh, I see.
And so it's just like, okay.
So any did anybody like anybody specific hit home with
No,
you?
I think I was just looking for hot girls or something and just be like,
Oh, I see.
oh, all right. So,
One of
yeah.
them that I've mentioned in the past that like I started getting into jiu-jitsu, and Brazilian jiu-jitsu, right? And I remember growing up when we were taking martial arts, there was a Brazilian jiu-jitsu academy close to where we lived in Torrance.
Yeah, it
Or
was
the
Gracie,
academy
right?
was in Torrance. Yeah, it was a Gracie Jiu-Jitsu Academy. And like fast forward to now, I realized that like the head guy now, like the main, I don't know, like the main instructor now, he's like our age. He could be a bro on the bro show. Because like I guess he grew up like around the same time as we did, and I think it's pretty cool that number one that he was in that position to be given that opportunity, and he apparently made very good use of it to kind of learn in the family business and the family art and kind of take it over. But also it kind of makes me think about if there's anything that I'm going to pass down to my family and my kids and stuff, or just like the next generation of people based on anything that I contribute. I don't know. The only thing or the main thing that has me going right now is just being a husband, being a father, like being a good member of our family, being a good person to like my close friends and stuff. But as far as anything tangible, I'm not sure yet. I don't know. It's not something that was like obvious, like Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, you know. But it was funny. Like I guess in my mind, we were peers at one point. Me and this guy. And, you know, our lives have taken very different directions. But, yeah, it's kind of cool to see what that person's up to. And it kind of makes me reflect on, like, what I've done with my time and what I will do with my time. And, yeah, it's like the options, I feel like, are kind of spinning around in my head.
Mm-hmm. You think like still, right? Like, cause otherwise you're thinking, it's kind of, man, it sounds boring. Like, I'm gonna do nothing.
You no, know? I mean, I don't know. Like,
maybe you'll start a fried chicken empire at the age of 70, like Colonel Sanders or something. So, you know, there's still time for you, man. It's like, I don't know. It's, this is really bad on me to do. Cause I feel disgusted, like as with myself as soon as I do it, but, like, I feel like whenever I see somebody doing well, it's like, well, yeah, those guys are doing great. So I wonder what, like, is not so great about what they're up to right now. Like, where's the chink in the armor and all this stuff? And I'm just like, man, you gotta
bring him back. You gotta knock him off that pedestal because you don't feel like you're on that pedestal type of thing.
No, I mean, no, yeah, because I'm not on the pedestal, right? Because I'm a loser or something?
No,
or,
No. I don't. So I don't do that. I'd like to think I don't do that so much. I'd like to be happy for the people that I think are pretty accomplished. I'd like to, you know, be proud of them if I had some kind of connection with them, just like the Tetris guy.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. It's just normalcy, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, okay, so what he makes him normal, you know, right?
Yeah.
I'll bet you he puts regular gas in his car, right? Not premium. You do premium, I can't relate to you anymore. So, like, I don't know, right? It's like, I just order a number one like everybody else, man. He's like, okay.
That reminds me, there was this guy at work, because we do like a lot of fast food at work, right? And sometimes we'll do food runs, because at my occupation, we're not really allowed to leave the site if you're on shift. And then, but sometimes they'll let one person do a food run for like the whole shift. So one person goes around the plant and says, hey, I'm going to such and such place. Do you want anything? You know?
Yep.
And I remember this one guy, they asked him, hey, I'm going to go grab something to eat across the street. Would you like something? and then the guy, the coworker was like, yeah, give me a number one with no onions. Wait, where are you going? Like, dude, you don't even know what the restaurant is. Automatically, it's a number one with no onions.
I'm taking number one, man. I mean, let's see, McDonald's, it's a Big Mac, Burger King, it's a Whopper, Wendy's, it's like a classic double.
Carl Jr. is like a famous star or famous superstar star. Or something.
Right. Jack in the Box is probably a Jumbo Jack, maybe? I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, apparently it's whatever the staple burger is.
Yeah, right. In-N-Out, it's a hamburger. Actually, a hamburger, just hamburger.
No, I think In-N-Out's a double-double. I mean, we don't have In-N-Out here in Texas anyway. Well, not in Texas, okay. But not in Houston.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think it's a double-double.
Oh, well, that makes more sense then. Okay. Yeah, I'm trying to just list all the number ones that I know. Just feeling proud of my Chick-fil-A is Chick-fil-A sandwich.
Okay.
Yeah, Chick-fil-A classic chicken sandwich.
At Chick-fil-A, I can't think of anything to order now that I've tried the spicy chicken deluxe.
That's good. That's all I really want now. No, it's good.
And have you ever tried their potato chips? Or did you even know they have?
Yeah. Yeah, I have once or twice, yeah. They're pretty good also.
You can order them instead of the fries.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going on we can have a food talk because I'm getting on a kind of a healthier food kick because for Chick-fil-A.
No way. Awesome.
I will get for Chick-fil-A I'll get my like chicken strips or whatever the entree is that I typically get, but then I will get fruit now. I'll get fruit instead of fries. So okay. I'm not very fun in the lunch crew, but otherwise in terms of you know.
Do you ever do the grilled chicken instead of the like breaded chicken?
I'm there yet. No, I'm just kidding. Not for Chick-fil-A, not particularly, but for other places, yeah. Like what I've been trying to do is, I notice that like I'll get instead of a rice chicken bowl or something like that, or burrito at Chipotle or something, I'll opt for the salad option and then just still get the meat on there, so it's super hearty still, and just pile on vegetables. But it's almost like protein. It's like a protein style burrito or something.
Okay.
You know where. Yeah, it's like no rice or anything. There's this place called Cava over here, and it's basically like Chipotle but for Mediterranean food. So I'll get baby spinach. I'll get like this a little. So they have this thing called green and grains, a green and grains bowl, which is baby spinach, or it's they have like 5-6 different varieties of greens you could choose from, including like the superfood, which I'm like hell no, you know, like the kale and all that stuff. So I'll go with the baby spinach. And I'll add some rice to it, but they don't put the full portion of rice like you would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you think that, like, how does that, is it difficult to do, like, kind of consciously changing the way you eat each meal, or is it difficult, or is anything surprising about it?
Yeah, it's kind of going off the talk that we had last time about, I think if you're emotionally invested in your goals, and one of them being that, then it's not that easy, or it's not that hard, I would say, to will yourself to do it. Sometimes a bit tricky to remind yourself, like, oh, hey, you should try to, you know, like veer away from what you normally get. So you have you're trying to define like a new normal.
Yeah.
Right. And so sometimes if I don't eat healthy, it's not because I was indulging necessarily. Sometimes it is. Don't get me wrong. But a lot more times now, it's just like, oh, I forgot there are healthier options and I can choose that. But I just really, I didn't even want to think. So I just go with what I used to get. Yeah. So like, I'll remember later and I'll be like, oh, okay, well, I guess I better, you know, make a more concerted effort next time.
And
so
you think about maybe, do you think about what makes you remember or what made you forget in the first place?
I would say like the other non-food related parts of life.
What's that?
I think it's like the other non-food related parts of life.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, yeah. Just like lunch is a good one because lunch is a good example because, you know, it's in the middle of a work day for me.
Yeah.
So if my work day, it's interesting, like the stress management part of my work day, if I don't do very well in that area, then it will cascade into a poor or less than ideal food choice at lunch.
What do you think about your habits or your routines being part of the reason?
Elaborate on that a little bit more.
So it's because I did this like 3-month diet thing last year as part of my little Biggest Loser challenge at work. And I remember reading a book and it applied like very directly, and the book was called The Power of Habit, and I probably should remember the author, but the title of the book was The Power of Habit, and it was very good. Talking about the psychology of how we think and the nature of how human beings are, the good and the bad. And basically the habits can be summed up pretty simply. And once you understand why your habits are the way they are, then you can kind of control them and alter them to tailor to whatever you want, whatever your objective is. And the driving force of the habits, according to this book, was cues, like triggers, you know, something to like reminders, if you will, and then rewards or consequences. So if you have the before and the after, then the middle part is pretty much just habit, you know, and you either are having to do something against the habit, which requires some willpower, or you're just riding with the habit to whatever the consequence is. So it was pretty interesting the way, you know, the examples with what they how they made it sound like it's pretty much a clear cut, this is how you acknowledge your habits and this is how you control them. But for me, when it came to the controlling of the food and stuff, the reward was I was trying to win this challenge, you know. Mm-hmm. And some of these small rewards was I was seeing the feedback that I was looking for, whether it was me looking a little skinnier, when I step on the weighing scale, the numbers are, you know, drop a little bit each week or each day sometimes. Mm-hmm. But the cues were also, in my mind, as important. Some of the cues were like kind of negative though. So one of the cues that I was eating well was that I was kind of hungry. Like the fact that I was uncomfortably hungry, it kind of, because I had my eyes on the reward, the hungry was a bit of a bit of positive feedback that I was continuing to eat well. And when I went to go grab something to eat, it was a reason to continue to eat well instead of, oh, I'm so hungry. Now I want to like fall back on, you know, whatever I want the habits to be.
Okay. So I would say, yeah, for the cues and stuff, I mean, I used to be a lot more like robotic about it and a little bit more of a perfectionist and trying to come up with, all right, what's an ideal system that you can use for it. But I'm going to fall back on the cop-out answer of like, I think you got to listen to what your own style is. And also it's very like slow and steady wins the race for me has been working out. So like, for example, I was trying to use one of those fitness trackers for a bit to like gauge my
activity. You mean kind of like an Apple Watch type of thing?
Yeah. Apple Watch, or there's this other thing called Fitbit, for example.
Oh, that's right. Which, yeah. That's right.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Apple Watch can do the tracking as well, but it doesn't have to be $300 thing. Actually, the thing I got on Amazon was for like $25 or $29. And so it wasn't going to be the most accurate, but it was something. And really for me, I thought this thing is kind of just like a fad anyway. So if it dies out, then I didn't invest too much money in it.
So it was enough. It was enough based on what you were.
Yeah. Using it. So it looked neat. It seemed cool. And then I ended up like losing the thing. I was like, oops. but then I was like, okay, I got the gist of what it was trying to do. And so just the idea of measuring something for some part of the time is good. So, I've actually been kind of, counting calories using an app, but I haven't been religious about it. But it's done its job, which is to give you a sense of conscious eating, mindful eating. I guess you remember that there's a book, Mindless Eating.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah. So this is more about like, well, mindless eating causes these sort of detrimental habits, based on the way that that food companies want to get you to be more of a consumer in general. So yeah, I was just trying to get me to be more of a mindful eater. And so what it is it will take your weight and it'll ask you what your goals are. And then based on that, it'll say like, this is how many calories you have for the day. But what's neat about it is it breaks it down into like breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and then snack. And so, if you have a breakfast, like it'll allocate a certain number of calories for breakfast. And then if you have, that's more than that, right? Then what it'll do is it'll shrink the pieces of the pie left over for lunch and dinner and snack. So it's like,
it tries to make all these pieces and all these numbers kind of fit.
Yeah, exactly.
Even with less room to spare. So do you have craving still, or like what do you do when you get hungry or there's a craving or something? Does that change based on what you're trying to do?
It does. I mean, that one is probably where like water kicks in a bit more. And I do have cravings, but what I do is I just, as long as I don't have I don't indulge on the cravings for all three of my meals for the day, then, I'm fine, you know, like, because kind of like in reverse, I think we talked about in before, like sometimes you feel entitled to something or you feel like you deserve something because of something that happened. And so you're like, you know, I'm gonna get that double cheeseburger, right? So I kind of work it in reverse. I'll be like, all right, I'm gonna get that double cheeseburger. But in order to do that, then like I'm gonna cut back. And usually I do it, I do the cutting back thing first then, so that I give myself more of a reason to sort of
like a delayed gratification type of thing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so it's very much tied to like the same thing with money, right? Like in terms of saving, you know, saving for something first and then getting it versus getting it first and then having to save up for the thing you just bought and then eventually paying off a loan or something.
Yeah, and that makes me think about like working out, right? Like I've seen, and me personally, I've done both where sometimes I'll have like a good workout or something and then mealtime comes and part of me, like I have these angel and a devil on each shoulder. And, you know, one of them's like, you know, you just worked out. Don't waste the workout by eating like an unhealthy meal. But then the other part of me is like, man, you just worked out. If you eat an unhealthy meal, it'll like it's basically a wash because you just worked out anyway. Compared to if you ate the unhealthy meal and you just sat around all day. So
yep.
That choice, though, is I feel like I'm more the former, and I feel like I'm more likely to not waste a workout by eating an unhealthy meal, which is good, but it's good on the days I work out.
I got you. Yeah.
On the days that I don't work out, maybe then I'm like, oh, it's fine. I can eat the unhealthy meal because I didn't even work out today anyway. It'll just be like a complete lazy day, complete slob day.
Right. You know? Right. And it's interesting because I think, I'll try to match my mood to what kind of food I want to eat and then use the calorie allocation for portion control. So let's say that I'm up for dinner and dinner is like 900 calories or something. Cause it kind of, this app in particular kind of front loads dinner and makes breakfast a lot lighter. So
interesting.
I'm not gonna get all like scientific or try to, you know, change the formula.
Which one's better, which one's worse.
I'm just okay. So by the time, let's say, just for the sake of example, dinner's 900 calories, right? I'm like, well,
okay,
I know what I know how to eat like a 900 calorie dinner and where I feel satiated. And that's usually the more healthy choices, the more, because you just get more volume of like healthier stuff, right? You have to eat more of it in order to feel. And then I also know like a way where I can have like an indulgent 900 calories where it's just like, all right, well, I'm gonna get these, two tacos, but that's it, you know, like,
because so sometimes it's about what you eat, like, you know, which foods, and sometimes it's about how much you eat.
Like sometimes, for example, I'm not that hungry, but I feel like, you know, I should probably eat something because it's around time to eat. And even for myself, actually, I start getting like headaches and stuff like that if I don't, if I just skip a meal. So then if I'm actually not that hungry, then I'm like, oh, well, I don't feel that hungry. So, you know, let me I don't need to really eat a lot. So I can eat more of the, less healthy stuff, the more kind of indulgent stuff, you know, the more fatty sorts of things or.
Yeah.
Instead of saying, all right, well, I'm going to, you know, it's 900 calories, but maybe I'll only have like a 600 calorie meal because I'm not hungry, you know? So
is this something that you feel like, I would imagine parts of what you're doing, you can feel like you can try to incorporate like as part of a lifestyle change. And then maybe there's parts of it where you're like, okay, I'm going to do this for as long as I can, but I don't know. I doubt that it's going to, I doubt 5 years from now, I'm still going to be doing this part of the practice. Is it kind of a little bit of both?
No, I think I'm more on the end of like, let me see if I can make small permanent change versus like, let me see if I can, you know, swing to one side of the pendulum just to have that experience and then come back to whatever normal is. And hopefully that normal will have shifted because I did a sort of out of body experience or something like that. So
is there anything that you feel like you have changed that you feel like you don't have any desire to go back to?
I would say gambling. That's one.
Okay. Well, I was thinking more of the food related, but that's,
Oh, okay. Sorry. Food? I don't know. I thought you just life. It's
like out of left field. What the
Well, I was
like,
thinking.
Yeah, like dating other chicks because I'm married now. So.
You know what I'd do if I had $1 million?
Oh yeah, Office Space reference for those of you that are our age.
Yep. So, anyways.
So for me, I'm going to go back to my original question.
Sorry, go ahead.
So for me, it's beverages is something that I feel
Oh, like soda.
with the bev like soda or even alcohol, like even juices, really. Like I really feel like for meals now, and it's not like I only drink water all day every day, but for meals I usually am not craving anything other than water.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like every once in a while, maybe just a nostalgic thing, like with pizza, I want to have some beer, some soda or something, just because they used to go hand in hand together. But whenever I'm eating now, I usually drink water, and I usually drink a lot of it. Like even one, at least one or one and a half glasses before I even start the meal. And then it does change the amount that I eat and what I crave while I'm eating.
Well,
Yeah.
that's the same thing for me. I agree. Like I drink a lot more water now. But it took me a while to like just get accustomed to the taste of water again because from soda before. And I would say that what it came down to for me, it's like, hey, if you drink water, you get to eat more food because like you like food, right? Do you like food enough to like not have a, thing? So, I mean, that's what it was kind of for me. I was like, all right, I'm trying to stay in this area, this window, right? This budget, this food budget, so to speak. And yeah. And so, I mean, you can have a drink if you want, but then that just means like you can only have 2/3 of the thing or whatever, that you
And
wanted to
for me,
have.
it was kind of like there's two reasons to just drink water because it's usually free.
Yep,
Like at
that
home,
too.
it's at home. I just drink out of the fridge dispenser. Whenever I'm at a restaurant or something, it's usually just a free drink. So there's two reasons. I'm glad because if water was more expensive, then I'd have this kind of conflict of interest. But now it's almost a no-brainer. The more water I drink, the better in my wallet and the better for me.
Well, except for the fact that it's just boring, right? Like it can't come off as boring. But I would also say
Yeah,
that
but go ahead.
Just for me, for water, I spend a little bit of money on some water. I don't go all like Evian or anything, or what's it, Fiji water or anything like that. But
Yeah.
I will get the $3 for Costco 40 pack. That's
Oh,
cool.
for some bottled
Yeah,
water.
so
Yeah, and
yeah, bottled
yeah,
water
I
for
guess even for
me.
some it's
Yeah, bottled water for me, it was for a while I was trying to make sure that I had like 8 glasses a day, but it's easier to track 4 bottles of water a day. So I was like, all right. And
Yeah.
we have like at work, we have water, like for free that you can get. Yeah, and the cups you can go and get. But I'm like, for some reason, that was enough. Like that effort was enough for me to not drink water. Because it was an opt-in thing versus an opt-out thing, right?
So you defaulted to something else.
Yeah, exactly. Like I would bring water with me to work and I would set them on my desk, like almost crowding my monitor. And so when I was staring at code or I'd be on phone calls and stuff like that, I would just have the water with me. Whenever I got in the habit of whenever I went out with the guys for lunch, I would grab a bottle of water with me. And I would always try to grab a full one too, because I was always afraid, like, well, what if I grab a partial bottle of water and then I finish
And then you're
it
thirsty
and then I
afterwards.
want more water, then I gotta like get like the tap water and then I'm not counting it anymore. So I'm like, no, forget this. I'm just gonna get a full bottle. So, obviously it's very neurotic of me, but
No, but hey, it's something that it's part of why it's part of your habits now, though. I mean,
yeah,
it may
exactly.
seem neurotic to someone that doesn't do it, but if it makes sense to you and it makes it so that you're practicing what you're trying to practice and it makes it a little less effortless in your mind, then it's probably worth it, right?
May I say for one moment, we'll take a little break from the water and say like Diet Coke is crap and diet soda is just like the worst. Like it's there's okay. You can get yourself to enjoy the taste of it perhaps, but like it's the ultimate betrayal of like, oh yeah, this is better for you than regular Coke. And it's like actually it's not, Because the while the artificial sweeteners don't have any calories, they actually probably make you more hungry and make you like consume more calories just in other places. Maybe because of that, like, oh, I deserved it because I had a Diet Coke, right? Or, you know, it's the classic American mentality of like a Big Mac and a Diet Coke or something like that. But
Yeah, and
yeah.
that I was gonna say that too. Like it goes, it's I think it's just as deceiving as, you know, healthier options on a menu, but you're probably still gonna have appetizers or desserts or like educational games in the toy section at Target or Walmart.
Okay, yeah.
Like there, I think that the putting the word educational there, or putting the word diet, or putting the word healthier, it's supposed to trigger this kind of this motivation in some type of consumer to say, okay, I'm gonna do that because that's the kind of person that I want to be.
And really what it is just like an ego stroke. You're just like, oh yeah, well, you look, I'm a better human being because I'm doing this, you know, freaking diet, educational, organic, whatever thing, you
Yeah,
know.
organic is another one. I mean, there probably is some truth to organic produce and organic meats and stuff, but
Yeah.
I mean, what about what's the other one that I was thinking? Gluten?
Gluten, yeah, sure.
You know, like
Or trans
gluten
fats.
free and stuff.
Yeah.
Trans, yeah. I had no idea what those were until probably 5 years
I think it's
ago.
because we're Asian, so I don't think it affects us or something like that.
And now
Because I
apparently they're
think,
a thing.
yeah.
They're like on all the labels of everything, like huge letters. But for me, it's still something that I don't really know what it is, and I don't know if it's something that I should really care about or
Yeah.
start counting or.
No, we're fortunate to not have to worry about it. There's just they might as well just say, like, instead of gluten-free, like, you can also say peanut-free. Right? So like, well, why would I care
Oh,
about
okay.
peanut? It's so it's all it is to make sure that you don't you get a, some people have an allergic reaction to gluten. That's all.
So like
It's not a health thing
soy,
actually.
you know, sometimes they have like lactose or soy.
Yeah. But it's been marketed as a health thing. But
Yeah.
then really, you know. Again, it's just to try to make you either feel good about yourself that you're getting that the gluten-free or the, you know, the extra special, the whatever. Or maybe it's trying to get you to feel shame if you don't get the in thing. I
Well,
think.
whatever it is, I think it's just trying to shift your focus from
Like a
whatever they don't want
distraction.
you to see. Yeah, I mean, kind of. Yeah, like because it, like maybe the menu or you know like what people eat, people become so routine and it's like always the same old thing all the time. Now they got this gluten to kind of stir up a little variety. Or they got like the little trans fat, like reduced fat Oreos. You ever heard of reduced fat Oreos? Man, if you're eating Oreos, you're not looking for reduced fat anything. They have them. They have these reduced fat Oreos. They have a little thin layer of like white stuff in the middle.
Yeah, I think that's more to do with now our culture of choice more than anything. So we have
It's
reduced.
always been about choice, right? I mean.
No, I mean not as much as it's getting worse. Like if you're at the grocery store and you're like, dude, there's 18 kinds of orange juice here. Like not even 18 kinds of juice, 18 kinds of orange juice, you know, like.
And yeah, no kidding. But really, like the thing about more options now is, are you more likely to be content with the option you choose because there's more options?
No.
Because
No.
I don't
Yeah.
think so. I mean,
No,
like, have
because
you heard
you
that?
have the fear of missing out thing. So, yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
There's like a there's some kind of study about like if you're stuck in traffic or something, and you know you merge a bunch of lanes. Or you take like a side street detour and then you get back on the freeway or something, or you just stay in one lane, right? Well, like studies show that like on average, none of it matters really. But the person that took the side road and jumped back on the freeway later, like they felt like they are going to get home faster because they felt like they were in control of that taking that side road, where the person that's just stuck behind the same car in one lane, it's a little bit more of like a frustrating feeling.
Yeah, that's a, kind of the same thing as like this studies are. I don't want to use studies, just my theories about lines. So there's, imagine two types of lines when you need to get something. So one is like a line at the grocery store where there's different checkout stands, and right. you can pick one of them, right? And uh-huh. you'll either be happy or not happy with your choice, right? Then there's also like the line at that you'd experience at a bank where it's actually a line that feeds to the central point, and then one of the tellers will call you, right?
From
that point.
Yeah.
For when you're
basically
ready.
Basically just one line for everything.
Exactly. Now, scientifically uh-huh. speaking, right, that line actually moves faster, has better throughput because it's actually designed, like it's more efficient that, But however, because like you could stand in the wrong line and then you're just standing there forever, right? Mm-hmm. But the thing is, in terms of like customer satisfaction, you probably dread more standing in the bank line because in terms of perception,
because you're in a long ass line,
everybody feels like they're standing in a long line. Yeah. Whereas in some places, like some are short, some are long, right? So,
also it seems like, I've heard this too before. It feels like it's taking forever because you see the people that are stuck in front of one teller mm-hmm. more than you see the people moving in and out.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Exactly. Yep. And same thing with the traffic thing, right? Like if it's a 4-lane highway, then there's only a 25% chance that you're in the fastest lane.
Yeah.
No matter what lane you're in. And, so. Well,
and yeah, I've heard that same thing. And they say it's like a 33% chance because really you can only see or you're only looking at the lane on your left and your own lane and the lane on your right. I mean, maybe, yeah, you are looking at some of the other lanes.
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah.
The point is,
so
it's not
a 33% chance.
It's a minority chance.
That you feel like you picked the right lane mm-hmm. because – whenever the other lane's moving faster, you're just staying still. Whenever this lane's moving faster, your lane's staying still. But
right. Yeah. What was that? What was that quote that your friend said about 50-50 choices or something like that?
90% of the time you get them wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like.
That was something we used to say in the Navy. Because they would always ask us all this stuff and like we're always wrong.
That needs to be like almost a cousin or relative of the like Pareto 20-80 rule, you know?
What's the 20-80 rule?
The 20-80, it's like it's kind of like a dynamic like that happens in lots of different areas. Like so one example of the 80-20 rule is in order to get a task done 100%, right? You'll get the first 80% of progress will only take 20% of your time. And then the remaining 20% we'll take like the remaining 80% of your time. Stuff
yeah,
like that.
I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe a step cousin. Because that's that 80-20 sounds real.
Yeah. I don't know.
This 50-50-90 thing. It doesn't seem just sounds like it's a.
Yeah.
It's
just a mind trip or something like that. But no, this is called a Pareto. Pareto or Pareto? P-A-R-E-T-O. So.
Like going back to that line thing, I've heard that airlines, like, you know how some airlines, the way they board planes. Mm-hmm. Some of them start from the back of the plane, then go to the front. Some of them, you just board and you sit wherever you want.
Right. Yep.
Some of them have these little groups, mm-hmm. like you're in group 2, group 3, whatever. Yep. Well, I think they're all supposed to be how you can board the plane the fastest because it's like more on time departures is like better for the business, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. But, I've heard like. The best way really, like it's let's say everyone was a robot, mm-hmm. the best way to board the plane really would be starting with the window seats from the back of the plane to the front of the plane. Mm. And then you go to the middle seats, back of the plane, front of the plane, and then you go to the aisle seats. And it's because if you load the back of the plane first, everyone's trying to get their luggage in at the same time. Mm-hmm. Where there's all these other people that can be putting in their luggage like toward the front of the plane. But they're not there yet because they're all waiting in the terminal waiting for all these other people.
Right.
So, but then the people I guess people don't want to do that because then it's going to split people up from their family members and stuff. And, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know.
Also, there's a chance, like, especially when you're one of the later people boarding the plane, there's a chance your bag won't make it on. So the people just want first because not so much that your bag is with you, but just like, is it my bag? Do I need to gate check this thing? So, and also just like, like customer experience and user experience at the airport has now just become a joke in general.
Oh, terrible.
Because
I was having this conversation with this guy at jiu-jitsu class, and we were talking about, I guess, the inventor of metal detectors, right? Apparently, that guy, he invented it to, like, detect cancerous cells in our bodies.
Oh.
Or, like, detect stuff in our bodies, right? And, apparently he said, if I knew that it was going to be used for this, for, like, this airport security, I would have chosen not to invent it.
Yeah. Because it's used probably more for that, right? Than any other purpose.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's just, it's so, unfortunate.
There's also something that, like, apparently the Keurig guy, like, okay, you know, coffee. Keurigs are kind of like the new coffee pot, right? Like, you know, you see Keurigs instead of coffee pots now, but I guess they're really terrible for the environment.
Oh, right.
Because those little plastic cups, you just throw them away.
Sure.
And they're made to withstand so much heat because you're making coffee through them that they make them like really thick and durable.
So they're not biodegradable and stuff like that because they're going to withstand like the elements of nature.
Sure. And so really like the whenever that Keurig was being designed, invented, whatever, it was intended to just be like in businesses and almost like vending machines and stuff.
Right.
Where consumable wise, it wasn't supposed to make that much of a carbon footprint, but to be in every home or you know like virtually a household item now, like the Keurig guy was like, man, I would have never. I'm sorry, my bad.
Right.
I think that the intent of a lot of inventions was probably different than the way they were being used.
Oh yeah, I mean that's I think that's kind of a burden that you take on by advancing technology or like advancing things by way of inventions, because there will be people who can come up with the dumbest possible use for your thing.
Yeah, so. Dumb, but also like self-fulfilling.
What do you mean self-fulfilling?
Right. Yeah, like how am I going to use this to my advantage?
Oh.
Whether or not it's used in the best way, like rewritable CDs back in the day. Mm-hmm. We're just going to steal a bunch of music now.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah, I was just thinking about like the internet, and it's just like we have this amazing technology to share all of the information, you know, right at our fingertips, and it's just trolling.
Swipe right.
Cat, you know, photos or whatever.
Oh, I thought you were going to say catfishing.
Catfishing as well.
It's like a new thing that it wasn't even a thing 10 years ago.
Right.
But it's a thing because of the internet.
Yeah. Exactly. And I'm touching the light stuff, you know. But that's what it is. If something is becomes such a part of your world, you're going to have a wide range of uses for that thing. So
I've also heard that like the regular, I don't know what you call them, regular trades. Like, they're kind of going away, and they can't go away. Like, carpenters and welders and, like, regular blue-collar type jobs, Americans aren't going for anymore. Everyone wants to be, like, the entrepreneur, the tech guy, the Silicon Valley. You know, I want to make my fortune, and I want to pay other people to do all this stuff that I don't want to do. But you have to have these people to kind of make society function, right? Like package delivery is never going to go away. I mean, you got to deliver goods, right? You got to have goods and services.
Sure. I know a lot of probably futurist type people or technologists will point to, you know, disruptors. Robots. Yeah, robots or some sort of crowd. Like when I say disruptors, like Uber, for example, right? Is disrupting the idea that, we're always going to need taxi drivers, you know? Or Amazon drone delivery or something like that, right?
Yeah.
That
made me think. Yeah, I was thinking earlier before when you were talking about lines about self checkout. What do you think of self checkout? Because you know, I've heard a couple of things. Number one, like, okay, if you got a few items, it gets you in and out of the store faster. However, you're taking jobs away from employees because it's like a job that someone used to do for you that now you're doing for yourself.
At this one, there's no clear cut, you know, obvious choice here. I'm going to side on the side of, no, the technology is there, and the jobs lost, I think, from that is just going to be, evolve. Yeah, it's going to shift over. Yeah, like, exactly. Right. To self-checkout operators and managers, you know, or, or like self-checkout repair people, you know, whatever. So it kind of levels up everybody in terms of the skills that are needed to operate in sort of the new world.
And that's true. I guess, for the people.
So there's going to be winners and losers in that, right? And so it's going to suck for those who lose, but for those who win, then they now have a trade that they didn't have before. So
yeah, like some of the losers, like apparently back throughout history, I've heard that some of the losers in that type of like evolution are porters or bellhops, mm-hmm. you know, like. People that used to carry your luggage for you, right? Like that used to be someone's career, like someone's full-time job, right. Like forever. But then somebody that made luggages said, let's put wheels on these things. That way people can wheel them off themselves. Mm-hmm. And now you go to a hotel and somebody that's kind of relying on your tip money, they're like, hey, can I get your bags for you? And you're like, no, thanks. I got it.
Exactly. Where's the carts at? Okay. Let me get the cart, please.
Let me get that little. Yeah, let me get the cart. But I also heard that way back in the day, I heard before we had alarm clocks because there was alarm clocks is like technologic. You know, we're relying on technology to wake us up. Mm-hmm. So before that, apparently they used to have someone go around the village and knock on everyone's door. Like there was a door knock,
like a wake up service or something.
Yeah. And that used to be like someone's job.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
So, like you
paper
said,
paper boys, you know, gone. Yeah, even the paper, right? It's like, even the newspaper is being threatened. So,
and I would say like journalism is not yet being threatened, but like printing presses.
Exactly. Yeah. Stuff like that. Newspaper businesses, right?
Because I've heard that like I don't know what the exact numbers are, but I'm gonna make them up. So I've heard that like 6 of the top 10 jobs a decade from now don't exist yet. I've heard a saying like that. Where what really makes it weird though is like, so what do they teach in school, and what do we teach our kids then? Like, what are the basics? You know, that, okay, you're going to have to know this. Well, maybe I'm not. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Right. Like that's what kids are going to say. Like, yeah, that's what kids are going to ask too, right? They're like, how do I apply this in the real world, right?
And it's probably what we asked.
Sure.
When we were kids.
Yeah.
And some of the stuff, you know, we were probably 50-50 as far as the stuff we were like, all right, I probably do need to know how to multiply. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then some of the stuff we're like, no, I really don't need to know about dot matrices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So I would say that that's almost its own topic of like, you know, how do we educate a population, right? And so
yeah,
I mean, I think the system we have is geared for kind of like blue collar work where you're trying to teach people how to be compliant, conformant, right?
Self-sustaining.
Well, not really self-sustaining, more like understanding what the status quo is and following it, I would say.
Well, when I say self-sustaining, I mean like as a nation, I guess.
Oh.
Like we want to be able to do things for ourselves and not rely on outsourcing.
Okay.
And stuff.
When I thought you were talking about self-sustaining, it was more in terms of entrepreneurship or you know, self-made people. We're definitely not.
No, yeah.
That.
So not a person self-sustaining, mm-hmm. but people, us as a group.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So we are trying to build a solid kind of working class, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, and so
I mean, what is the answer? Like, really, you might want to find out what kids or what young people want to do, and then you know like capitalize on that. But there's not enough time in life, man, right? I mean, that would take that would add another like years and years to like the education
system
that we have.
So that would require a blunt assessment of what you think your child is capable of, and more importantly, what they're not capable of. And that is probably a lot of, that is probably something that a lot of parents, including myself, is probably not willing to take on.
Like art? Like
No. Like I would say, let's say that there's a, you know, for every one white collar job, there is like three support jobs, and like 10 like blue collar jobs, you know, within a certain specialty. And so if I were to ask you, all right, well, which one of those things do you think your kid is going to do? I don't know how many people would be like, oh, I don't think he's good. They're good enough for the top level job. I think they're only should pursue like the blue collar thing, you know? So
you're right. Making that choice and kind of like, not abandoning, but focusing on that option and kind of limiting your options toward the other. Well, what am I trying to say here? Like, if you're going to be blue collar or white collar, you choose one and then you kind of put the other one in your back pocket type of thing?
No, you tailor the education to be either more like academic or more practical, like more theoretical or more practical. So somebody who's going to do more blue collar work, you're going to give them more practical skills. Like it's going to be more like a trade or trade school, right? Like,
yeah, that's what I meant. But I mean, like, and I would say because sometimes that decision's not made early on. Like it could change, you know, you might start blue collar and then become white collar or something like that. But all I'm trying to say is, whenever you're kind of choosing what to learn and, you know, as teachers, what to teach, how is it that how do you keep all the doors open while trying to focus on one?
Yeah. Trying to like serve a kind of a mass produced product, right? Of education. It's not really one to one. So that's I would say a pretty impossible ask. Let's say you have to make some choices, right?
In my mind, it's literally impossible because it seems like by trying to keep all the doors open, you're preventing the focus of, you know, like you're hindering the focus of one door.
Right. So I think what they're doing, what the educational system strives to do, is they try to identify what they would consider the average student, and they try to teach that student. And if you are not the average student, then you need to adjust to whatever is being taught. And
so kind of like, I don't know why this is probably a bad reference, but kind of like itemized deductions and standard deductions. like maybe you could, so if, because if you are average, so hear me out real quick. If you are average, or if you don't have kind of a calling, like me, you know, I like at the beginning of the show, I talked about how I didn't really have a thing to kind of a unique opportunity to capitalize on and kind of make my name or my legacy or whatever. Mm-hmm. So if you're kind of average, then maybe you start there and then work your way up. But if it does seem like you have some kind of niche or some kind of unique opportunity, like if you're like an outlier of sorts, then you kind of you can kind of start stepping away from the average because you do have like a direct path, you know, or at least some kind of target instead of like veering off the average path and then you're just wandering around. If you're just going to wander around, you might as well stay on the average path. But if you do have a goal and it's away from the average path, then it doesn't sound like it sounds like it's a calculated risk to go down that path instead of the average.
Well, yeah. And so the fact that it's a risk is probably against what parents want for their kids, as much as I hate to admit it, like parents want their kids to be safe, probably above all else. even
more than they want them to be to stand yes. out.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And
I don't know if I agree with that.
Well, I would say like think about what our parents wanted us to be. You know, I think our parents wanted us to like go like find a stable job, basically, right? And yeah, like, but, yeah. So like,
I mean, but they're immigrants,
right?
So doesn't that change our destiny because we're not immigrants?
I don't know.
Not just because we're not immigrants, but I think so. I married an immigrant, and our parents are okay. immigrants. And I feel like them migrating, I might want to ask them, but I feel like them migrating was one of their ways to stand out. Apart from just staying in their country, walking the average line.
I understand that, but do you think their parents wanted them to migrate?
I don't know, but my point is, our average is boring is being born and being raised in this country. So standing out is going to take a different set of circumstances instead of just living in America. Like for them, I think living in America is standing out or like living away from the country they were born in.
I would argue that they probably migrated despite their parents' best intentions for them.
Yeah, but I think a lot of kids do things despite their parents.
So that was my point. My point is that like as parents, you think that what is best for your kids is just like what is safest for them. That's what I'm saying, and so despite what we may project onto our kids, they're gonna want to do their own thing. They're gonna want to, you know, try to strike it rich, make it big, and all that stuff. And so, like, I think the default is to say like, "Oh, are you sure about that? Because that might be taking a big chance." Like, we're gonna be risk averse toward the type of choices that they make.
Well, I guess I draw a different conclusion. So for me, I think that parents don't – I don't think parents want their kids to be safe like you do, but
okay.
I do think that parents – like for me, I think that me as a parent, I feel like I should be a safe parent in order to allow my kid to stand out. Hmm. So like I almost need to act – it's not like faking it, but I feel like to give my – children the best opportunities to be successful, I think I need to be like a stable foundation in their lives. Also, I think that all parents, and it's almost unavoidable, I think we have this misconception that because we're older and because we're a little wiser in some ways, that we know what's best for them. And we probably do whenever they're infants.
Yeah,
and they don't know how to change their own diapers, but there comes a time. And in my mind, it comes before they're 18 years old, that they could probably start making some decisions for themselves. And we are not willing to let go. Like, we're not willing to cut the umbilical cord because we're parents.
So, okay.
Because of those things, because of our – so I guess for me, just speaking for myself, I guess – by me thinking that I know what's best for my kids based on I've been alive more years than them and based on my intention of trying to leave all the doors open for them, I think the best way I can do that is to be the safe, boring, stable, whatever you want to call it, type parent. But it does not mean that it's what I wish in their lives.
I see.
I don't mind them taking a couple of risks and fall and, you know, stumbling a little bit if it's going to mean that they're going to eventually find their way, and if failing on the way to success is I don't mind the failures even, like, because they may lead to success.
Yeah.
And it's not my choice anyway. I think
parents, there's something about, you know, like accepting what your kids want. But I also don't know, like, a lot of parents who wish their kid the pain and suffering that may come from taking those risks and not working out in their favor.
I guess it depends on what type of risks we're talking about. So mm-hmm. Maybe if you're talking about drugs and crime, then I'm with you.
I have a full ride scholarship. Yeah, I have a full ride scholarship out of college, but I don't think I want to do this.
And you're saying that some parents would try to talk them out of it, or you're saying some parents would try to prevent them?
Yeah, some parents would be like, hey, you have a full ride scholarship to college. Like, you should use this. Like, yeah, I don't really think college is for me. I think I want to start my own thing.
And it sounds like you think that they shouldn't do that, correct?
No, it sounds like for me, I think that right now, theoretically speaking, I'd be okay with them like trying their own thing. But in the back of my mind, I may judge them for being like, man, you are just missing out on an opportunity here. And so it falls back on, like, if I were to think to myself, all right, like for one of my kids, I'd be like, hey, be smart about this decision. What I mean be smart about this decision is actually like, be safe.
Choose this
be
option.
Safe. Yeah.
Don't choose
like,
this option.
Like be understand the risks. And then like for myself, it falls on risk aversion, you know, like understand the risks of this, of what you're walking away from. So
I'm curious to, cause our kids are real young, you know, we're talking hypothetically about kids that are like teenagers or older, but I'm wondering if your opinion on this is going to continue to stay this way, and mine's going to continue to stay the opposite even when our kids are that age. But I'm also wondering if there's any examples where we differ already.
There might be. I mean, for example, I think I work a, you know, standard 9-to-5 job, but there's a part of me that wonders, I wonder if I like would start my own thing. And I think it's pretty deeply ingrained in me that the reason I don't start my own thing was because of the way that our parents were with us. And not to say that we couldn't do things, right? But it was more like just remember what, like, think about what you're doing here, you know? And so what they wanted for us, and you know, whether we obeyed or not, right? Like is kind of outside the point. But I think what they wanted for us was to be to not be, how do I say this?
Disappointed?
Yeah, like to not set ourselves up for, like, you know, like when you say, like, don't bet the farm, right? That's a phrase that comes right out of, you know, understanding risk and do not do something too risky, because risk is almost equivalent to, you know, stupid, right? So that also excludes us from opportunities where some people who have made it did it by betting the farm.
So my question was different than your answer, but I was more talking about the if it reflects on our parenting styles. Like, are there things that I've done with my kids that you would do differently, and their situation was different? However, I do want to touch on what you just said, though, because it sounds like what you were saying was, you're not exactly living the dream job that you know right now, but the reason you stay with it is because of what you feel like our parents wanted it from us. Is that
well?
Correct?
I'm saying there are times where I've made it work for me, and I do enjoy what I do. So that's a positive. I also understand that I did close some doors that could have been very, very fruitful. But the reason why I closed
them. Your reasons stem from our parents. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Like or the way that I was raised.
So for me, I feel like my situation is very similar as far as, I'm not living the dream job. I'm kind of like working to provide for the family and live life and everything. I've found enjoyment and fulfillment in the job that I have, just because I feel like it's what I do and it's who I am, and it's something that I've chosen to do. But I feel like the reason I haven't explored more career-wise is not because of my parents, but it's because I'm a parent, and because I'm a husband. Mm-hmm. And it's more for the immediate family that I've created instead of the immediate family that I was born into.
Okay. And so I'm thinking that you'd want your kids to think similarly too, like when they're in that circumstance. If they have their own family, think about what you're doing if you're going to decide to, you know, think about your future, right?
Yeah.
So that's all.
I guess so. I don't know. I guess I haven't thought that far ahead yet. I was just thinking about it for my own, for this transition that I'm making, you know. Mm-hmm. The immediate future I had when I was a kid, and not the immediate future, but the immediate family I had when I was a kid, and the immediate family that I have now, my life, kind of my decisions in life, revolve around the family that I have now, which I'm the head of. And will they make those same decisions? I don't know. I don't know yet, but I would like to think that By me still being the head of that family, I can set up a couple of safety nets to where maybe they can explore. They can kind of venture out a little bit. They can take a couple more risks because the consequences aren't going to be that detrimental. They're not going to be that that permanent to where they're really betting
the farm. You're right. So then in that case, you're the one that's laying out the safety net for them.
Kind of. I mean, I'd like to. I don't want to make it sound like I'm going to provide for them if, like, yeah, that's.
Yeah, just so by the way, I don't know if this is a flaw or not. It's just a feature of being a parent, and so it's a force we should be aware of.
Well, something that I see in parents and, like, especially, like, baby boomer age parents, I think that one of their goals, it was to provide for their kids to where the kids that are, like, our age now and maybe, like, in their 20s and early 30s and stuff, I think are still they're still kind of leaning on the safety nets that our parents provided for us. And I feel like we're getting too comfortable there. I don't want to make it sound like I want my kids to get so comfortable in the safety nets that I provide to where they don't go out and do anything, because that's not the goal. But I would like those safety nets to be there almost as an emergency use type of situation.
Yeah, sure.
But like, I do want them to kind of take the risks and stumble a little bit. That way they can learn some of the things that I feel like I didn't have the opportunity to learn, or I didn't take the opportunity to learn because of the situation that was laid out for us.
Yeah. And I think this all comes back to, like, what is the answer for, like, what are our kids supposed to learn, considering that, like, your made up number, 6 out of 10 jobs that are out there for them have not even been invented yet, right?
Not just career oriented, but it's kind of like in life, like not just like what it's more of a legacy thing to me, where, like, what do you want your life to be remembered for? Where sometimes it's career wise, but sometimes it's not. Like for me right now, I don't feel like I'm going to be remembered for my career. I feel like I'm going to be remembered for what kind of husband I was, what kind of father I was, what kind of brother I was, what kind of friend I was. What kind of employee I was, then that's a little bit icing on the cake. But if being a good employee means that it's going to cost me being a good husband and father, then it's a choice that I'm not willing to make.
Yeah, sure. I don't know if that's the case or not, but if you set it up in that way, then it becomes a little bit zero sum. So, you know. So anyways, I know we're kind of running up on some time here. Maybe we'll we'll go ahead and save it for another time. So, all right.
All right. Well, thank you for listening. For those of you that are still listening.
All right. Catch you later.